Scripture reading today comes from John chapter 19, starting in verse 38, going to chapter 20, verse 8. Later, Joseph of Arimathea asked Pilate for the body of Jesus. Now, Joseph was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly, because he feared the Jewish leaders. With Pilate's permission, he came and took the body away. He was accompanied by Nicodemus, the man who earlier had visited Jesus at night. Nicodemus bought a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 75 pounds. Taking Jesus' body, the two of them wrapped it with the spices in strips of linen. This was in accordance with Jewish burial customs. At the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden, a new tomb in which no one had ever been laid. Because it was the Jewish day of preparation, and since the tomb was nearby, they laid Jesus there. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. So she came running to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, and said, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him." So Peter and the other disciple started for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but did not go in. Then Simon Peter came along behind him and went straight into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. Finally, the other disciple, who had reached the tomb first, also went inside. He saw and believed.
Ever so often, the gospel writers will insert a little story or a little detail, or maybe even just a word or a phrase that causes us to just pause and wonder. A story that maybe just doesn't quite seem to fit, or a detail that seems a little bit irrelevant, or maybe a word or a phrase that just doesn't seem to be in the right place, and it makes us stop and it makes us wonder and think, why did they say that? Maybe an example of that is found in the Gospel of Mark, when Mark is telling us about the arrest of Jesus. And in the middle of telling us that part of the story, he inserts this miniature story about a young man who's unnamed, who's just wearing a linen garment, and one of the arresting soldiers grabs him, and he flees, leaving the garment behind. He flees naked. And I've often wondered, why did Mark tell us that? In this grand story about the arrest of Jesus, why do we need to know that there was a streaker in the Garden of Gethsemane? I just don't get the point of it. Maybe you've had those thoughts before as well. And maybe another example of what I'm talking about is found here in the Gospel of John, in John chapter 19. That is, he's telling us about the burial of Jesus. He tells us that Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus go and gather the body of Jesus off the cross, and they anoint it with perfumes. And then he says in verse 41 that at the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden. And in that garden, a new tomb. Now, why did John tell us that there was a garden? It seems to me to be a detail that's kind of irrelevant a little bit to the story. He could have omitted that detail and just gone right along and told us about the burial of Jesus, and we wouldn't have missed anything. But instead, he seems to have a reason to pause and to say, "Oh, by the way, next to where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden, and in that garden, a tomb." Have you ever wondered why John tells us that there was a garden there? He's the only gospel writer that says that. Matthew, Mark, Luke, they don't mention anything about a garden. It's only John that says there was a garden nearby. And why? You might say, "Steve, this is just one of those things where, you know, sometimes the gospel writers, they just insert some detail, and we don't really know why. It's just there because they wanted it to be there. After all, they were humans, and sometimes they just wrote in details that just were there." Really? Well, if we believe the Bible is inspired, which I do, and if we believe that God's Spirit was guiding the gospel writers, which I also do, I have to think that John inserted that detail with some purpose in mind. He didn't just haphazardly put that down for us, but instead there was a reason behind him telling us that near the place Jesus was crucified, there was a garden. But what was that purpose? Someone might say, well, maybe it was a geographical purpose. Maybe John was trying to alert us to the location of where Jesus was crucified and where he was buried, the tomb where he was buried. It was near a garden. Well, possibly. The traditional spot where we think Jesus was crucified is a spot west of the Temple Mount at a place where there's now a church called the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And in the 19th century, there started to be some skepticism on whether that actually was the place of Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection. And there was a man named Charles Gordon, who was a British military officer, who came to Jerusalem in 1883, and he noticed another spot. And this spot was not west of the Temple Mount, it was north of the Temple Mount. And it had a hill that looked kind of like a skull, as you'll see here. And then he noticed nearby there were some tombs. But the clincher for Gordon in his mind was John 19:41. There was a garden. He noticed there was evidences for a garden there. And so today when people go to Jerusalem on their pilgrimage, they go to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, but they also go to Gordon's Calvary and to the garden tomb. Because that may be the place where Jesus died, buried, and was raised. We don't really know for sure. And someone say, well, maybe that's the reason. He's trying to give us a geographical clue to where Jesus was buried. But it seems to me that can't quite be it. Because if that was it, it seems to me John would have done a much better job than that. Because I imagine in the city of Jerusalem, there was a whole number of gardens. Now, if he had said, near the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden named the Garden of Joseph of Arimathea, or the Garden of something, that might be a better clue. But he just says there was a garden. So it seems to me that it wasn't geographical of why John puts that phrase there. So why is it? Why does he tell us that? You know, if you start to go deeper into the Gospel of John, you notice a couple other things. First of all, you notice this isn't the first time that John mentions a garden. In fact, in John chapter 18, verse 1, he tells us that Jesus was arrested in a garden. And again, he's the only gospel writer who tells us that fact. Matthew and Mark describe it as a place called Gethsemane. Luke describes it as the Mount of Olives. Only John says that when they crossed the Kidron Valley, Jesus and his disciples entered a garden. On top of that, if you go to John chapter 20, and we have the first resurrection appearance of Jesus, he appears to Mary. And Mary, for some reason, doesn't recognize Jesus. Instead, John tells us she thinks that he is what? A gardener. Isn't that interesting? You start to put it all together. Jesus, according to John, was arrested in a garden. Jesus was crucified near a garden. Jesus was placed in a tomb in a garden. And when Jesus was appeared as the risen Christ, he is thought to be a gardener. Anyone see a theme here? And one thing about John, if you've read the Gospel of John before, you know this, that one thing that he loves is symbols. He loves symbols. He loves taking an idea or taking some element and looking into a deeper way, using that as a window to show us a deeper idea about who Jesus was or what it means to follow him. So he uses symbols like the symbol of bread or the symbol of water, or he uses symbols like sheep and shepherd. He uses symbols like vine and branches. He's the only gospel writer that tells us that when Jesus was crucified, there was a spear in his side and blood and water came down from his side. He loves symbols. And could it be, just could it be, that John is doing it again? And he's given us another symbol. Except this time, the symbol is a garden. And why would John want to emphasize this fact that there was a garden nearby where Jesus was buried? What happens in a garden? I did some gardening this weekend. You should be proud of me. planted some blueberries and strawberries. What happens in a garden? Well, you take a seed, and a seed is what, dead? It's dead. There's something inside of it, but it's really dead. And we plant it in soil. We plant it in decaying matter. That's what soil is. It's dust. It's what we're all going to become someday. From dust we came, and to dust we're going to return, right? And we take this dead seed, and we put it in decaying matter. And what do we do next? We put a little water. We let the sunshine come over it, and we wait. And in time, around this time of year, what happens? New life sprouts. A flower blooms. A plant starts to grow. And if we tend it well, that plant will grow up and start to bear fruit. From a dead seed, in dead dirt, comes new life. That's what happens in a garden. Gardens are places of transformation. They're places where caterpillars turn into butterflies. They're places where things that were dead and dormant for weeks become alive. That'd be another way of putting it, as gardens are places of new creation. And scholars have noticed that one thing in the Gospel of John is another theme that he has is the theme of creation. In fact, if you read the very first verse of John, he emphasizes this very truth. He begins his gospel by saying, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." And I have no doubt in my mind that as he wrote those words, he's hoping his readers will reflect back on another beginning. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, where it says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." John's wanting us to think about creation as he writes that verse. And let's go down that track a little bit further, because I think John wants us to go there. What happens in creation? Where does creation all start? It starts in a garden. We call it the Garden of Eden. God makes this beautiful place, has rivers, has streams, has trees, has flowers, has animals, and then God takes his crowning achievement, human beings, Adam and Eve, and he places them in the garden. He wants them to cultivate. He wants them to take care of it. And everything is the way it ought to be. In the middle of the garden is the tree of life. Also in the middle of the garden is the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Not supposed to eat of that. But everything else is great. Everything else is good. And God has his creation just the way he wants it to be. He's able to walk in the garden in the cool of the day. Everything is good. But then sin enters the world. The serpent tempts Eve to take of the fruit she's not supposed to take of. She eats of it, gives it to Adam. He eats of it as well. And sin enters. Things change forever. And now there's separation between God and mankind. Now when God comes to the garden, Adam and Eve run and hide because they're afraid of God. Now there's separation between Adam and Eve. They start blaming one another for the problems that they have. And there's even separation between Adam and Eve and creation itself. And the end result of all of it is death. Death and all the consequences of sin. And God has to tell Adam and Eve, "You leave the garden. You got to go. You can't have access to the tree of life anymore because you disobeyed me. You've got to leave this place." And there are angels stationed at the entrance of the Garden of Eden with swords, blocking the entrance, not letting Adam and Eve come back to get the tree of life. That's where it all starts. And it's almost as if John, as he writes his gospel, he's wanting us to think about creation, about that creation story, and to tell us, "I'm writing another creation story." It's the new creation story, if you will. And guess what? This creation story, this new creation story, it has a garden as well. But this garden is different. It's got a tree of life, but it's not a tree with fruits. It's a cross. And this garden is not the place where sin enters. This garden is the place where life begins. This garden is not a place where people have to run and hide from God. This is a garden where the Son of God actually calls out your name as he called out Mary's name. This is not a garden where there's angels with swords saying, "You can't come in here." This is a garden where angels are there, but they have no swords. And they're saying, "Come and see where he lay." You see, this is not the garden where the first Adam
brought sin and death and all the consequences that came with that. This is the garden where the new Adam, the Son of God, the Messiah, where he is bringing forth redemption and restoration. You see what John is doing? He's trying to get us to see that what's happening as Jesus has died on the cross and buried in a tomb and now been risen, what's happening through all of this is new creation is happening. New creation is happening. And where there's been darkness, now there can be light. Where there's been sin, now there can be forgiveness. Where there's been chaos, now there can be peace. Where there's been brokenness, now can be restoration. Where there's been death, now there can be life. And where there's been despair, now there can be hope. That's what he's telling us. And often gardens are a place of hope. Why is it that we like gardens so much? We have this community garden here at our church building. Why do we like gardens? When we go for a picnic, why do we go to gardens to picnic? Why don't we go to a mall? What is it about a garden? When you go on a romantic stroll, why is it that you walk through the botanical gardens? Why not walk through the government building or something? What is it about the garden? I heard a story about some Sudanese refugees who had been relocated to Florida, to Tampa, Florida. And as you can imagine, being refugees, life had been very, very difficult for them. It was hard for them to get acclimated to our culture and to our way of life. Their homeland was being torn up by war, and so it was very difficult for them to find a place, their place in Tampa. And so a couple churches got together, and they created this huge garden called the Tampa Bay Gardens. 5.5 acres of church property they just converted into a farm that those refugees could come and they could plant and they could tend and they could harvest. And they were interviewing one of the refugee women, and she said, you know, just being out here in this garden, it feels like home. Feels like home. And what is it about gardens that give us that feeling, make us feel like we're home and make us feel good? Heard another story about an organization called Growing Veterans. This is organizations up in Washington State. It's an organization for veterans, people who have served our country in Iraq or Afghanistan or even as far back as Vietnam, and it's a place for them to come. And there's this huge garden. They can come and they can tend and cultivate this garden, be around other veterans. And they found out that this is incredibly therapeutic for them, just to be around other veterans and to work in soil and to plant seeds and tend it and all these kinds of things. And so someone interviewed the director of the organization. What's the big deal about it? Why is this making such a big impact? It's just a garden. It's just people coming out and gardening. What's the big deal about it? And the director said this. He says, you know, you just get a little bit of hope when you plant a seed and you watch it grow. You just get a little bit of hope when you plant a seed and watch it grow. And that idea has spread to prisons. Heard about a situation over in California in the San Quentin prison. They've started a program called a vegetable garden program. It's not for all the prisoners there, but it's for a few of them. They're able to work in a vegetable garden that's surrounded by fences. It's there in the prison. They're able to plant, they're able to tend it, able to cultivate it. And what they've found out is that the recidivism rate for the prisoners in San Quentin is about 60%. That means about 60% of the time when they get let out of prison, they're going to go back. 60% of the time. But they also found out that those who work in the vegetable garden program, you know what their recidivism rate is? 10%. Why? What's the difference? Because you get a little bit of hope when you plant a seed and you watch it grow. You get a little hope. Because as you walk in a garden and you see things that have been dormant for weeks now spring to new life, when you see things that you've planted and you've put in the ground and somehow, amazingly, it sprouted new life, you start to think, if God can do it with that flower, if God can do it with that plant, just maybe he can do it in me. And could it be that John wraps the story of the death, burial, and resurrection with this symbol of a garden because he wants us to know that what's happening in Jesus is new creation. And if it's happening in Jesus, it can happen in us. It can happen in us. That's what resurrection's all about. Dead becoming life. And that's the message for all of us. That wherever you've been, you don't have to go there anymore. Whatever messes that you've created, those messes can be cleaned up. Whatever brokenness you have in your life, that can be repaired and restored. Whatever bad habits you've developed, those habits can be stopped. They can be changed. Whatever chaos your family is going through, it doesn't have to be chaos forever. There can be peace. Whatever mistakes you've made, whatever sins you committed, they can be forgiven. Why? It's not because of me. It's not because of my power. We try to manufacture growth sometimes in gardens, but it doesn't work too well. It's not by my power that resurrection happens. How is this able to happen? How are we able to move from death to life, brokenness to restoration, chaos to peace, despair to hope? It's because of the power of God. The power of God to bring about new creation, to take something that was placed in a tomb that everybody thought was dead, and early on a Sunday morning in a garden, some women go there and they hear a message. He is not here. He is risen. And that same resurrection power that raised Jesus can raise us to new life as well. And every time spring comes around, and every time we walk in a garden, we're reminded of that truth. If God can do it with these things, and if he can do it with his son, he can do it in me. And it starts right behind this screen in the waters of baptism. As Scott read to us, we are buried with Christ and we are raised. And the same power, the very same power is at work in us, raising us to a new life with a new purpose and a new meaning. And if you're ready to take that step of being baptized, we're going to sing a song. And what a great day to be baptized. Amen. What a great day to be raised to new life than Easter Sunday. And if you're ready to take that step, just come to the front. Or maybe you need prayer and encouragement. You just need hope because you're going through a difficult time. We're going to have ministers and elders surround an auditorium. Just walk to them. Be bold and walk to one of them and let them pray over you, encourage you. We encourage you to do that if you have a need. Please come as together we stand and sing.